The 14th story, The Little Lame Prince. Very beautiful is the story of the little lame prince. He was a dear little fellow, 5 years old, the grandson of King Saul. His father was Jonathan, Saul's son, who, as you will remember, was the bosom friend of David. One day Jonathan and Saul, the king, were away from home fighting against the Philistines, and the little prince, whose name was Merabal, was at home with his nurse playing just as happily as though there were no such dreadful things on earth as war and fighting. His nurse was with him, for of course someone must see that no harm came to the little grandson of the king. She loved the little fellow and was good to him, yet it was her fault that he became lame. While Merabal was playing with the nurse this morning, a messenger came running into the house. His clothes were torn and he had dust on his head. "What is the matter?" cried out the nurse when she saw him. "Do you come from the army?" "Alas, yes," he replied, "and woe unto us! The Philistines have won the day. King Saul is dead. Jonathan has fallen in battle. All is lost. Take the little prince and flee for your lives." The nurse was a good, faithful creature. She knew that her first duty was to save the prince. So, with no thought for herself, she gathered him up in her arms, set him on her shoulder, and ran for their lives. All would have gone well had she not stumbled and fallen. In the haste and confusion, and in her fright, she had not looked well where she was going. The little boy fell with her, and when they picked him up, both his ankles were broken. No doctor could be found to set the broken bones, and the poor little prince was never able to walk again. The nurse carried him safely out of the reach of the Philistines, but his condition was pitiable. His mother was dead. His home had been destroyed. His good father, Jonathan, had been killed in battle. Even his grandfather, Saul, was dead. He was a helpless little child of 5 who would never walk again and had no splendid future ahead of him. When the nurse had fled with him, she had taken him across the Jordan to Lodabar, which lies among the mountains of Gilead. There was a good man living here, whose name was Machir. He had a fine farm and several strong, healthy sons. Machir gave Merabal a home, and he grew up on this farm. He became interested in the sheep and the cows, and in watching the men as they gathered the grapes and harvested the grain, and the women as they made the butter and cheese. But he was very sorrowful when he looked at Machir's strong sons. He could only sit and watch. He could not handle the scythe nor the flail. All he could do was to use his hands. He shelled the beans and tended the churn. After a while, though, he grew a little stronger, strong enough to learn to ride on an ass, and then he drove the cows to and from the pastures. But he wished he could work on the farm like the other boys, and he would often look down at his poor, useless, broken feet and say, "How good for nothing I am! How miserable! How sad it is to be lame!" Things were not quite so bad, though, after he got able to ride. Sometimes he rode as far as Mahanaim, where his uncle Ishbal was trying to be king in place of his grandfather. Oh, how he wished he could be a soldier and fight for the kingdom himself! Although he had only been a small child when his father died, he could remember being told by Jonathan that his name, Merabal, meant "a hero of the Lord," and that his little son must grow up to be a hero and a soldier like his father. Then he looked again at his helpless feet and wept, for he knew that his uncle Ishbael's army was all the time growing weaker, and that of David was becoming stronger and stronger. Finally, the dreadful news was brought by a messenger that Ishbael had been murdered in his bed, and that there was none other of the family of Saul to reign. This was indeed sad news to Merabal, for although he knew he could never be a soldier, and it was necessary for a king to be a soldier in those days, he had always hoped that he might be able at least to leave the farm one day and be a prince again. But when Ishbael died, all the little prince's property was lost. So now, in addition to being lame, he was also very poor. And then something else happened. A terrible disease broke out among the people. By hundreds and thousands they grew sick and died. They thought that God was punishing them for some of the evil things they had done, and they tried to think what they were. They remembered when Achan stole the wedge of gold, and the thing which Saul had done to the Gibeonites who were descended from the men who brought the moldy bread to Joshua, and with whom Joshua had made a treaty of peace forever. Saul had broken the treaty. He had fallen upon the Gibeonites and tried to destroy them. Of course, all this had happened years ago, but it might be that the Lord had awaited this time to visit his wrath upon them. It was the only thing they could think of. So David sent for some of the Gibeonites and said to them, "What shall I do for you that the Lord may take away this plague from us? Shall I give you gold and silver?" "Nay, we want neither gold nor silver. We want revenge." "On whom do you want revenge?" "On Saul, who killed our brothers. Give us 7 of Saul's grandsons. We will hang them." David was very sad. He remembered that he had promised Saul that he would not kill his children, but he felt that he must keep his word and do anything he could to stop the death of his people. But he could not forget Jonathan, his dear dead friend. His mind went back to the days when they were boys together, when he had slain Goliath and Jonathan had given him his sword and his robe and girdle. Then he remembered what a staunch friend Jonathan had been to him when the king had determined to kill him, how he had first warned him of Saul's anger and had then helped him to get away. But the thing he remembered best of all was what Jonathan had said to him when they parted for the last time. "When I am gone, David," he said, "and you are king over Israel, for the sake of our love for each other, be kind to my sons." David had solemnly promised that he would do this, and now he remembered his promise. The little lame prince hidden away in the mountains was greatly frightened when he heard of the demand of the Gibeonites. But Machir proved a good friend and kept him out of sight of the searchers until they had found 7 other grandsons of Saul. They took them and hanged them, and after they had satisfied their desire for revenge, David called his steward Ziba to him and said, "Is there no son of Jonathan to whom I may be a friend?" He was told that Meribaal was still at Lodabar at Machir's farm, so he sent some men whom he could trust to get the young prince and bring him to his court. When Meribaal, sitting helpless, looked up and saw David's men coming toward him, he was terribly frightened, but they told him the king wanted to be kind to him because he had loved Jonathan, his father. So Meribaal went with them to David's court. The king restored to him all the lands which had belonged to Jonathan and Saul, and as Meribaal was young, he appointed Ziba, who had been his own steward, to manage Meribaal's property for him. But alas for Zerubbabel, Ziba was not an honest man. He had once been a servant of Saul, and after the king was dead, he had attached himself to David. He had become very rich. He lived at Jerusalem and had 15 sons and 20 servants of his own. He was a rascal and a traitor. He had known all along that Meribaal, the son of Jonathan, was living at Machir's farm in Lodabar. It was he who had answered David's question as to whether there was not a son of Jonathan somewhere to whom he could be kind. He had gone with those who were sent to Lodabar to bring the young prince back, and when they arrived, he led Meribaal into the presence of the king. David told Meribaal that because Ziba was so faithful, he had made him his guardian. He did not know how false he was. The years went by. Meribaal had been very happy at David's court, but after he became a man, Absalom, David's ungrateful son, began making his father a great deal of trouble. He wanted to be king himself, and the people were divided. Some took the part of David, some the part of Absalom. At last, David was driven from his throne and had to flee from Jerusalem with only a few faithful friends who would not forsake him. Of course, David had counted on Meribaal's being faithful to him after all his kindness to him. When he looked about him as they were fleeing from the city and did not see him, he called Ziba to him and said, "Where is Meribaal?" Ziba was very busy. He had 2 asses saddled and ready to ride, and he had brought 200 loaves of bread, 100 bunches of raisins, 100 cakes of preserved fruit, and a skin of wine. When the king saw these things, he asked again, "What are these things for, and where is Meribaal?" "The ass is for the king to ride," said Ziba. "The bread and fruit are for the king's household to eat. The wine is for those who are faint in the wilderness to drink." "And where is Mirabal?" asked David once more. "Grieve not, O king," answered Ziba. "Mirabal is in his house in Jerusalem. He is false to thee. He is friends with Absalom. He says to himself, 'Am I not the grandson of Saul? Am not I the rightful heir to the throne of Israel? David took my father's crown. Now I will be king.'" Then said David to Ziba, "All that I gave to Mirabal, I now take back and give to thee." Ziba bowed to the ground and said, "Thank you, my lord and king." And he left David and returned at once to take possession of Mirabal's lands, which the king had given him. David was very sad. He could not have believed that Mirabal would be false to him. He had counted on his friendship, and he was never in such need of friends. He cried out, "Mine own familiar friend in whom I trusted hath lifted his heel against me." But after the battle in which Absalom was killed, David returned to Jerusalem. The people came flocking about him again, and Ziba was first to greet him. He met David at the banks of the Jordan with his 15 sons and his 20 servants. They did all they could to help the king and his household cross the river, and to do everything in such a manner that it would please the king. But David's heart was heavy in the midst of the rejoicing. He could not forget Mirabal. They crossed the river and went on into the city, and when they came to the city gate, David halted. At the gate sat Mirabal, and he was a sad sight. Since the king had been gone, he had neither changed his clothes, nor cut his hair, nor cared for his poor lame feet. And when David saw him, he knew at once that something was wrong, and said, "Why didst thou desert me, Mirabal?" "Oh, my king," said Mirabal, "I did not desert thee. Ziba has deceived us both. I said to him, 'Saddle me an ass that I may go with the king. Bring me bread and fruit and wine that I may take them to the king.' He got the things as I had told him, but when all was ready, he got upon the ass himself and rode away, and I was helpless on account of my lame feet. He told you I was unfaithful. He has taken away my lands. I care not for that. I have been poor before, and I can be poor again. You have been good to me. You have saved my life. I have sat at your table. Believe what you will, O king, only do not believe that I was false to thee." David was pleased to hear Mirabal's words, but he was puzzled as what to do with Ziba. Finally he said, "You and Ziba may divide the lands between you." "Nay, O king," said Mirabal, "let him have the lands. I care not for them now that thou hast come home again in safety and no longer believest me false." But David had his way, and Mirabal was given back half the lands. He remained with David as long as he lived and was faithful to him always.